Welcome to the Texans Talk Podcast. I'm Mark Lane. You can find me on Twitter at TheRealMarkLane. I'm the managing editor of the Texans Wire, which is texanswire.usatoday.com. Make it your homepage and hit F5 the whole time. I'm joined by John Crumpler, as always. And John, where can they find you on Twitter?
You guys can follow me at John H. Crumpler. I'm the Texans Wire. I was our lead draft analyst. I don't really know what my title is anymore, but I'm right in there. I'm bringing good content. And Mark, I'm excited for another episode of the podcast today.
Yeah, you're our lead Nico Collins analyst.
Yeah, I thought that was a good article today. I was looking.
It was a great article. I liked it because what you did was you showed how not only is it a great opportunity for Nico Collins, but also how Nick Caserio leveraged the receiving core against if Collins doesn't develop by having John Metchie there. And then how if John Metchie doesn't develop, well, Nico Collins is there. So it's a win-win.
Yeah, they've got two gambles who I thought it was interesting. I found a tweet that pointed out that Nick Caserio traded three draft picks for both Nico Collins and John Metchie, moving up to those spots to take them. So two receivers with very different profiles, and one of them should hit and provide a really good complement to Brandon Cooks. And I think the dream for Pep Hamilton and kind of what my article centers around is the way they complement each other. Ideally, both could hit. And then the Texans could have a pretty, I won't say elite, but a very good three wide receiver set.
Yeah, and that really behooves Davis Mills, who I think is getting, let me put it this way, when it comes to Davis Mills, we have an article on Texans Wire where Keyshawn Johnson on his ESPN radio show ranked the second year quarterbacks. And he had Davis Mills at number 6 out of 6. Okay, and what's the explanation? And he didn't even give an explanation for why Mills was there. He just said, well, the organization is committed to Davis Mills. And like he didn't even give an opinion, good or bad. It was so funny. But that's what I mean. Yeah, that's what I mean when it comes to Mills is it's. I think he's being slept on. That's my take. Are you seeing it that way? Are we just really in the Harris County bubble, and we can't see beyond that? Or do you think he's getting slept on?
I think it's probably somewhere in the middle of those two things. I do think that covering the Texans and interacting with the fan base, we are in a unique echo chamber of optimism around Davis Mills. It's people who watched him every game and who have found the highlights and things to look for optimism in, and they've played those again and again. And we've seen really just the good be amplified about Davis Mills. Meanwhile, the national spotlight, when I read an article like that, Mark, you know what my first thought is? It's that they did not watch Davis Mills play football last year. And then I think the easy narrative is just to say, Houston's sticking with this guy because they drafted him and they know they're going to be bad anyways. He's a third-round quarterback, so his talent must not be as good as the other guys. And it would be controversial to say that Davis Mills is in a better position to succeed than Justin Fields, even if you and I would probably both say that's true. And so the easy out for the national media is to put Davis Mills last.
Yeah, it is, because, like you said, I mean, really, they weren't in a whole lot of primetime. Not primetime, but even as kind of like the Washington Generals, they weren't in a lot of nationally televised games. And the only one that they were, Week 3, and they weren't, like I said, they weren't in any of the late afternoon game of the week type of situations to even just get beat up on.
Mm-hmm.
And so people didn't get to see Mills a lot. I mean, I would think that really the only people nationally that would have any idea of Davis Mills would be Adam Archuleta, James Lofton, and basically those guys on the CBS broadcast teams, because it's like everybody else really didn't get a chance to see Mills. And as a result, yeah, I think that they just say, well, he's going to be bad because Houston was bad. And I don't think that they take into account everything that Mills may have going for him this year.
Mark, let's play a game. What do you think was Davis Mills' biggest national moment last year, while we try to put this into context?
Beating the Chargers.
Okay, that's exactly what I was going to say. And I don't even think it's because he beat them. I think it's just because the Chargers DST in fantasy football was the number one option that week. They were picked up in like 80% of leagues to start against the Texans. And Davis Mills lit them up. I feel like that's the only time most of your casual, national, non-Houston NFL fan heard about Davis Mills.
Right, and he was, just in terms of efficiency, 77.8 completion percentage, 2-0 touchdown interception, only sacked once, 9.4 yards per attempt. So he wasn't horrendo, 130.6 a passer rating. So he was efficient, and frankly, he managed the game. And that's what I'm saying, is that I think that was his biggest moment.
Yeah, I think that Houston is just such a dumpster fire, or it's been perceived as such. I think they're on the right track.
They weren't a dumpster fire. They were like the waste management fleet. The trucks all caught fire.
It was bad. It was really bad, especially going into 2021. And Houston didn't win enough games last season to change that perception. They didn't make any sexy free agent additions. And the assumption with this team is just going to be that it's a bad football team and everyone associated with it is also pretty bad until they start winning games.
Yeah, and it is going to be that way. And then when they start winning games, how much of a deep dive are they actually going to do into that? But I think that's really kind of pie in the sky. But, you know, it could happen.
No, I was going to say, if they win games, I think they'll get some love. I think that they're a great story with everything that happened after Watson. I think the national media does love Lovie Smith, very likable dude. Davis Mills is a great story. I think they'd catch some headlines.
Yeah, they would. And I think what would help them catch headlines is just what they have put around Davis Mills. I mean, look at it. He's actually going to have an offensive line where people know where they are, where they start.
Amen.
He's going to have a running game, because I think Damian Pierce brings a lot of enthusiasm and optimism to the running game. And then he's going to have a bevy of receiving targets. So he's going to be in a lot better position to spread the ball and to manage the game than he was last year, with no run game, no offensive line, and basically having to throw short passes, just hoping that something would open up downfield.
Yeah. Question. Do you think that Damian Pierce gets over, and this is going a little off track, so I'm sorry, but does Damian Pierce even get over 50% of the snaps in the backfield next year? Because I'm really excited about him too. But do you think this is the kind of team that would commit to a rookie back with how much they put on the system, the culture, leaning on veterans?
You know, I think so. I think that he would, because I don't know how you shy away from him, because when it's November, how you can justify, the only way is if Marlon Mack comes back. Because I don't know how Rex Burkhead or anyone else keeps him away from the touches. So unless Marlon Mack returns, then I think that Pierce, just by succession, is going to get 50% of the touches.
I mean, it's possible that Marlon Mack could do it. It's just this team was so dedicated to Rex Burkhead for no reason, when I really thought they would have leaned into Scotty Phillips. second-year running back from Ole Miss, who's no longer with the team. I am hesitant to think that Pierce will get the opportunity, but I do think, like you said, the pieces around him are better, and when we see the talent on the field, Pierce is going to represent a sure upgrade.
Yes, and if they can get a running game going, then that's going to, I think, complement Davis Mills. And really, what I think his problem, Davis Mills' problem would be, is that he might get too conservative and be a captain checkdown. I don't think that he would ever gunsling the offense into problems a la a Jeff George or a Jay Cutler type.
No.
I think that really what might cost them games with Davis Mills is just being a, you know, just being a conservative guy, because he does believe that you can never go broke so long as you're turning a profit.
But that's not exactly what we saw last season. I thought that Davis Mills he did well pushing the ball, being aggressive down the field. Obviously not a gunslinger by any means, but in the games where I thought he was being too conservative, I would have put that on former offensive coordinator Tim Kelly. Thought they were way too restrictive in what they let him do. I'm pretty pumped, and they are going to try to win through the run, but when the time comes, Mills has got the ball, and he doesn't really hesitate to push it. It could be pretty interesting, especially if, like we touched on a little earlier, someone like a Nico Collins or John Mechie can really catch on as a legitimate NFL perimeter wide receiver.
Yeah, if the opportunities are there, he's definitely going to take them. I'm just saying, if things aren't going well, that would be where I see Mills costing the team, if that makes sense. Where, like I said, whereas some quarterbacks, they just put the game in their hands and then they're throwing four picks and getting sack fumbled and all that. I'm saying he's just, if the situation's bad, he's going to check down. That's all. That's just like what I see as his weakness being, if the situation's bad.
No, I hear you, and I agree with that.
So, anyway, I think that Mills offers a lot of optimism for the Texans, and you know what else does? It's this 9-man draft class that Nick Caserio brought forth to NRG Stadium. And joining us now is Eric Galco. You may know him from the Shrine Bowl, where he does excellent work as the director of football ops, player personnel, and he's also the president of Optimum Scouting. And we're very excited to have him on the Texans Talk podcast. Eric, thanks for joining us.
Appreciate it, man. How are you doing today?
Yeah, doing well. And rookie mini camps, they're about to kick off, and for Houston Texans fans, this will be the first time that they get to see the 9-player rookie class in Texans helmets and, well, you know, shorts at this point, since it's basketball on grass. But nevertheless, there's still some excitement of unpacking these guys, and you got to see these guys at the beginning of the pre-draft process with Thomas Booker, the fifth-round defensive lineman, Tegan Quitoriano, the fifth-round tight end, and the sixth-round tackle, Austin Deculus. These guys, they were at the Shrine Bowl, so we really want to talk about them. First, let's talk about Thomas Booker. It looks like he's going to be versatile, kind of an inside-out guy along the defensive line. What did you see when he was there at the Shrine Bowl with you guys?
Yeah, I mean, certainly, you know, watched these players their whole college career and before the season. And it's important to kind of make sure that, hey, it's not just what you saw at the Shrine Bowl, but what you saw on film before then. And I think for Thomas, you know, the production is one thing people jump out and say, oh, wasn't great, right? Only had a handful of sacks, I think, his final year. But I think the real value for Thomas in that Stanford defense was that, for one, he's playing all across the D-line on film. He's playing zero and one tech at nose tackle. He's playing three tech. He's playing four eye. He's working on the perimeter. Along with that kind of position versatility, his skill set versatility as a one-on-one pass rusher, as a two-gap you know, a one gap player that can kind of really take on two guys with his length, the ability to kind of win on the perimeter on the arc run. So I think he's shown that he can play a lot of roles and do different things within those roles at a very high level. I think for a team like the Texans, which is an awesome fit for him because they want to have, I think, more of a traditional, you know, probably a 4-3 cover two, Lovie Smith kind of their defense, but they're going to want to go a bit more hybrid and sub packages for sure. And also the fact that, hey, Thomas, he may be best as a one technique, he may be best as a three technique in that defense, but the value that he can play multiple spots early on, I think he'll have a role as a rookie and he'll kind of grow in a role that fits him best. But an awesome fit, great kid, high character, and extremely smart. And I think he and Lovie will hit it off right away. They probably already have in this pre-draft process. And I think he's an awesome fit for what they want to build in Houston, which is a versatile, position-wise, versatile defensive front seven.
Yes, and that's what Lovie Smith said at the Combine, was that he felt like Houston would be a defensive lineman's dream to come play in his system.
Yeah, I think it is. And I think the fact that Thomas is so smart, and I think he can win. I think what's really important for Lovie Smith defenses, right, is rushing with four and getting pressure and getting it. That way you can have your linebackers drop, your corners play aggressive and press, right? That's what Lovie Smith, I think, has historically really wanted in his defense. And the ability for Thomas to generate pressure in one-on-one, he did it in college. And again, it didn't really translate to sacks, but it definitely translated to pressures. And at the East-West Shrine Bowl in particular, he was arguably, if not inarguably, the most impactful defensive lineman all week in practice. And we had, you know, I think 7 or 8 or 9 offensive linemen drafted, one of which we'll talk about in a minute, Austin Deculus. So Thomas really made his presence felt at the East-West Shrine Bowl and showed NFL teams that his lack of production likely stemmed from the defense he was playing in, not because of a lack of talent, which he certainly doesn't lack at all.
Yeah, he'll be, like I said, a fun one to unpack. If not this year, then after he's been in an NFL strength and conditioning program going into 23. But as we've seen, Roy Lopez from New Mexico, and then he plays a year at Arizona. He's a 6th-round pick, and he starts 15 games for them at defensive tackle. Right. So they have shown the ability to develop guys early.
Yep. And I think it's important to, you know, not to gloss over it, but Houston's rebuilding. And I think Houston's a spot where if you're a 1st-round pick or a 5th-round pick, or Roy Lopez, I think, was a 6th-round pick a year ago, who cares? You might start. You might play. This team is rebuilding. I think it's a great opportunity for all these rookies, including Thomas, to not only find a role, but who knows, maybe starting and playing real snaps week one of the season.
Exactly. And so they do it again. They go with a 5th-round tight end for the 2nd consecutive year with Nick Caserio as general manager. And really just kind of the, you know, cursory talk is that, oh, Tegan Quitoriano, he's a blocking tight end. And, you know, he's just going to – but what traits does he have? Because you saw him up close. What traits does he have to develop and become a complete tight end?
Yeah, I mean, I think for one, he is a good blocker, and I think he has a value there too. I wouldn't call him a blocking tight end, not because he can't block, but because he can do a lot more than that. And this is a former, you know, high school basketball player who was a standout player as well too, has that kind of basketball athleticism, especially in terms of jump balls, winning in traffic, and reacting very quickly. And I think he is an ideal short, quick game receiving tight end in this offense, where he can play an inline tight end or an attached tight end as well as a tight end too, who can really work on those curl, flat, quick hitch type routes, because he can really be effective as a short area, quick twitch, extending away from his frame receiver. Add in the blocking ability. And again, it's pretty rare to have a player who has a lot of basketball athleticism to his game. We think of those guys as Antonio Gates or Jimmy Graham, but he can also block at a high level as well too. So I think the lack of elite athleticism maybe kind of turned some teams off and said he wasn't a top 100 pick, but it wouldn't surprise me at all if Tegan has a much better NFL career they did in college. One of the reasons in college he was a bit limited in terms of production is that they have a tight end for next year's draft, Luke Musgrave, who's also extremely talented. So I think Tegan is a guy that I think has been underappreciated a bit, and the basketball background, the flashes of on-film athleticism, especially in the short area, and you mentioned the blocking ability is definitely a strength for him as well too. I think he is going to be a part of the tight end rotation to start, but if he ends up being their tight end one by the end of the year, it wouldn't surprise me at all.
Well, I like him because he's got a really long last name, which is a key as a Texans tight end, because really they haven't had a TE1 since C.J. Fedorowicz. So he's got the long last name to go with.
And you can't spell TE1 without Tegan Quartariano. So T-E-T, I like it.
There you go. But yeah, he does, I think, because, correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like tight ends in the NFL, it kind of actually takes them a couple years to develop in order for these guys to be at the top of their game. Take, for example, Kittle and Kelce. I mean, they didn't just come out their rookie seasons dominating. It took them about till year three to really be at the top of the game.
For sure. I think the value, again, I'll harp on it again, but you mentioned the blocking. That's a role that he'll have value in year one. And I think it's always important in rookies, especially once picked after the top two rounds, that the sooner they get on the field in some way, special teams, in this case, blocking ability, is really, really important, because then you get a chance to be on those snaps, and you know how it goes, right? It's second and five, and you're going to call a run play, and the quarterback calls an audible, and now it's a pass play. You got to get a guy who's a blocker first, but has the athleticism, and then Tegan gets, 15, 20 receptions alone that season just off of audible calls, right? So that's why you want these rookies to have a real role on day three early, especially in the top five rounds. That's why a lot of teams draft guys, and the guys that surprisingly fall till later in the draft are ones that maybe can't play a role until they're ready to start. And that's always a weird dichotomy of the draft people don't appreciate is, hey, in the top four or five rounds, you want guys that can play early because it gives you a great rotation piece, but also a chance to see these guys in game action and then kind of go off of that. So again, I think Tegan will be their tight end two, or at the very least tight end three by week one, but you'll see him get more and more involved because a guy with that blocking ability, that basketball athleticism as a pass catcher is hard to find.
For sure. Now, the Texans, they took care of their tackle situation in the offseason by reworking Laremy Tunsil's deal, and they really by taking Kenyon Green. It kind of solves the question of where Titus Howard, former 2019 first-round pick, is going to play, and so it looks like he'll stay at right tackle. So this pick of Austin Deculus in the sixth round is kind of like when your uncle gives you $50 worth of Bitcoin. I mean, it's just a bonus, really. But with him not having the pressure to play right away, do you think that helps him? And when he does, what did he show at the Shrine Bowl as to where he would fit in best as a bookend?
Yeah, we're certainly surprised he lasted as long as he did in the draft. And I think that, obviously, as you well know, the Texans' offensive line positionally, right, it feels like Tunsil's at left tackle and Kenyon Green's at left guard. But beyond that, Titus Howard might be a guard or tackle. We'll see who's a starting center or guard. So a lot of turnover there. And I think Deculus right away can step in and be their top right guard and right tackle backup. He's played both in college. He played both at the East-West Shrine Bowl and was very, very impressive throughout his college season. And hey, sometimes scouting is pretty easy. The guy that started for 2 years at LSU on the offensive line, probably an NFL player. I think almost every or every offensive lineman from LSU that started at least one season the last decade has been drafted and played in the NFL, right? So it's sometimes pretty easy to find those guys. I think for Deculus, he is extremely strong, right? Was a shot put and other track star in high school and has that kind of natural wrestling, track and field background kind of strength. And that ability really translates to being a mauling run blocker upfield. But he has the feet to play right tackle, did so at a high level at LSU, did so at a high level at the East-West Shrine Bowl. But that ability to play right guard and right tackle, so, so important. The Texans obviously wanted to rebuild their offensive line this offseason. You know better than I do how many guys they added. So then they'll have three new starters probably alongside Tunsil and Howard. And again, I'm not sure Deculus is going to be the guy right away because he'll be translating to right guard a little bit, need some time. But it wouldn't surprise me at all if he passes Max Sharping and A.J. Khan to be their starting right guard in time.
Wow, that's I wouldn't exactly call that a prediction, but that's interesting analysis because, those guys are veterans and you figure that they would have the leg up and that would testify as to how talented Deculus is. And really, if he can do that, I think that it would give Texans fans a lot more assurance about the future of the line because you've got a guy that's a rookie, and presumably you've got 4 good years on his rookie deal that your interior offensive line is just taken care of.
we talked about with Teagan before, right? Finding a way for a day three pick to have a role immediately. And again, I think Austin is absolutely going to be the team's backup right guard and right tackle by the end of training camp. And the fact that getting that kind of guy who can be a really valuable backup and be a spot starter as a rookie is super impressive. But again, Deklas, he's not some small school player or developmental type guy. He can play in the NFL week one if he has to, for sure. I think he'll only get better at the NFL as well, too. Plus, he's a leader at LSU. He was a leader at the East-West Shrine Bowl. He's incredibly smart and can adapt to different offenses as well, too. So, again, I was surprised. I'm sure they were surprised he was there as late as he was in the sixth round. And, again, I wouldn't say he's going to be a starter right away, but he's got all the starter traits you want. I think it was a great value in round six.
And he's from nearby Cypress, Texas, so he's one of those local high school products that the Texans brought in this draft class. And, Eric, with this 2022 draft, my co-host, John Crumpler, when it was over, he was like, oh, thank goodness, you know, the draft is over, because he really poured into it and looking at these guys. But for me, it feels like it's draft season. It's still draft season. Like, it's going to be draft season all the way through the 2024 draft because of the capital that Nick Caserio has raised, particularly with the twin first-round picks in 23 and 24. It just still feels like draft season, and I can't pull myself away from it. I'm looking at 23. And so with that being said, who are some guys that the Texans should keep an eye on for the 2023 draft?
Well, it's hard to say that. And I think the one bit of help we'll say for the NFL draft the next year, if you're a Houston fan, is you really want Davis Mills to be the guy. And, you know, people talk about a lot, oh, next year's a good year to need a quarterback because it's a loaded quarterback class. And it is. I'd rather be a team that has a quarterback in a loaded quarterback class. Then you get the value that teams got when the Eagles traded up for Carson Wentz or the Rams traded up for Jared Goff, right? The teams that move back because they don't need a quarterback get so much draft capital. I think if you're a Houston fan, hey, I'm not sure playoff is something you should be expecting, but certainly in play, I think with the way they built this roster, if these rookies play well, it could be. But if you're not a playoff team and you're picking 10, 11 in the draft, that still might be a spot where teams want to trade up for a quarterback. So, and if you don't need a quarterback, you don't move down at all, you can still get a guys that fall a little bit. So I think the value of next year's class, and if Davis Mills is your guy, you're going to get, I can't say a Will Anderson or a Jalen Carter, who's the top non-quarterbacks, but you might, because the teams that need quarterbacks will always trump that, and you want to be a team that doesn't need a quarterback in a loaded quarterback draft. I think for Texas fans, I'd be rooting for Davis Mills to work out and not looking ahead to next year's quarterbacks, because if Davis Mills is good, you got a good quarterback, you can build the rest of that offensive defense around him.
Yeah, and that's how I look at it, is Davis Mills solves the quarterback for 22. He's kind of on a one-year prove-it deal. And and those twin first-round picks allow you chances to fix the quarterback problem if he doesn't develop as a starter, kind of like really on a Kirk Cousins track.
Yeah. Oh, well, I think you can do more than that. I think we too often.
Oh yeah,
in this
more.
Industry,
I'm just, you know.
Yeah, I think too often in this industry we pigeonhole quarterbacks and especially ones like Davis who have the arm talent, are good enough athletes, and are smart. The sky is the limit, right? There's not a huge difference necessarily in talent between Davis Mills and Joe Burrow. I think Davis showed a lot in a tough offensive situation a year ago when in his first year as a third round pick. That, hey, who knows? And I think it's really important that we, you know, sometimes look at this kind of below or above the line of this quarterback purgatory. And Davis has the talent to be above that line and be a quarterback that can win you games. And if you got a quarterback who can win you games, especially on a rookie deal, you don't take a quarterback to compete with them. You build around that guy. So I still believe in Davis Mills, and not saying he's going to change the world or is Joe Burrow, but I think he has all the tools that you want him to be successful. Because if he's successful and you got a guy, you're in a great spot as a franchise.
Yeah, I think he deserves a fair chance, and he's getting one because the offensive line, I would say, is better than anything that Houston has had in the past 7 years. And they gave him a semblance of a run game because, yeah, they're taking a chance on Marlon Mack, but they got Damon Pierce, which I think was great value. They also got Mechie. You've got Nico Collins, you still got Brandon Cooks, and they've got Deshaun Hamilton and Chris Conley came back. And so I think that he'll have at least enough weapons as opposed to minimal weapons last year to get the job done. And so I think he's really getting a fair chance compared to last year.
Absolutely. And I think the fact that Houston already has an extra first next year, an extra third next year. Again, if you have a team like that without needing a quarterback, you can really load up. And again, you see what the Eagles just did with their two first round picks. They turned him into Jordan Davis and AJ Brown. So I think it's not far fetched that Houston do the same thing next year if Davis Mills is the guy.
All right, Eric Galco, thanks for joining us on the Texans Talk Podcast.
Thank you.
And there he goes, Eric Galco from the East-West Shrine Bowl. Always good to talk to him.
Great interview.
Yeah, it was, like I said, he brought some insight into those guys. And if they can just really, when it comes to late-round picks like that, if they can just get their reps and just stay in the system, they can develop even by the end of the year. So let me ask you this, though. You got the young guys and then a really old guy in Jerry Hughes that Houston signed, the former Indianapolis Colts and Buffalo Bills defensive end. He comes into Houston. What are you expecting from Jerry Hughes?
I think Hughes is going to bring, like you said, a veteran presence. And for his role on the field, it looks like it's going to be a committee across from Jonathan Greenard. Hughes, Addison, and Green working in Okoro from the Los Angeles Rams. It looks like instead of with the team unable to sign a premier pass rusher in free agency, obviously very tight against the salary cap this offseason, and it's hard to convince great veterans to join this current situation, the team's taken a different approach. And if you keep rotating bodies, I think it can work out that you get high-level production from the other defensive end spot, even if nobody's going to have excellent stats with that. Hughes started 16 games last season in Buffalo. His sacks were down. He only had two. But we really just need him to get pressure. And I think the rest of the line is really set to take such a step forward. And there are some guys, other guys in that rotation, like a Green, like an Okoro, the guy from Los Angeles, that I'm excited to add him to the room because it starts to let you take advantage of everyone's skill sets at the defensive end position.
And really, this is what Lovie Smith's defenses were like when he was with the Bears. I know people think back to right around the time that he got fired in the early 2010s when they had Julius Peppers. But when you look at the Super Bowl season that they had in 2006, you had Tommy Harris, and it was predominantly the interior defensive line that got it done. Like I said, a Tommy Harris, a Tank Johnson. You don't really remember the defensive ends for the Chicago, and obviously the linebackers with Lance Briggs and Brian Urlacher, and then, of course, they had Charles Tillman playing cornerback. That's who you remember from Lovie Smith's defenses, not so much the defensive ends. So, yeah, I think it's going to be Jerry Hughes. He's coming in. He's part of the rotation, and he's someone that defensive line coach Jock Cesari really likes, along with Mario Addison.
Yeah, I mean, the whole defense is going to be better just by, I mean, the corners are going to be that's probably the most improved position on the team. And that should buy time. The quarterback can't get rid of the ball as quickly. And then when you put a guy like Hughes across from Greenard, and like you said, let people in the interior eat, Malik Collins at the three technique and Lopez at the one with Ross Blacklock and now rookie Thomas Booker rotating in, they have a chance to create pressure without having any stars. I think they've done enough on the defensive line to not only get through the 2022 season, but to say that they made a legitimate effort with the hand they were dealt.
Yeah, and I think that that's going to be the approach. And if they can just continue to cultivate takeaways. I like that Kamu Grugier-Hill's coming back for an encore because obviously he had a career year and he's really playing in a linebacker friendly system. And just what I'm anxious about what he'll be able to do in the in Lovie Smith's Tampa 2 for the second year, and then the type of growth that Lopez could take. And then you got Booker. He can play probably some inside, some outside, just really kind of take over that Charles Omenihu role.
Yeah,
so
it's a great comparison.
Yeah, it's just going to be bodies. You know, here's what we ought to do. Here's what we ought to do, John.
Sure.
We need to get a hold of someone that has run the Tampa 2. I don't know who, but if we can get a hold of someone, I know you wrote the articles, it was great breaking it down, but if we could just get a hold of someone that maybe coached with Lovie Smith at some point running this Tampa 2 and just really give some insights into the rush men and the rotation and just constantly having the guys get upfield, I think that might lend some insight into what Lovie Smith is trying to accomplish in Houston.
I will say, I do think that Lovie Smith, his defense is going to be more varied in 2022. He's kind of alluded to it in his press conferences. Obviously, he says he loves the Tampa 2. I think he compared it to good music. I don't remember what exactly he said, but he said it never goes out of style.
R&B.
R&B, that's what he said. But with the players that they drafted, they kind of are going to have to mix it up, Mark. Like, you're not going to get the best out of Jalen Petrie from a pure Tampa 2. I think you can put linebacker Christian Harris, despite the fact you have good rookies there. Like you said, Kaimu Grugier-Hill is back. Christian Kirksey's back. You can put Harris in better positions to succeed. And last year, Lovie's defense didn't really blitz at all. But these guys, Petrie and Harris, even Booker. Booker's a great athlete. I think he'll play the three technique primarily. You got to let them pin their ears back and go get the quarterback. So I'm curious to see if Lovie can adapt to today's game, which I think will require shifting. You can run the Tampa 2 as your base, but can you mix it up to take advantage of your talent?
And at least they have acknowledged this, whether it's like you said, it's Lovie Smith in talking with Jim Trotter from NFL.com, which we had an aggregation of that interview he did with our friends on the Wheelhouse on ESPN 97.5 in Houston with Jake Asman, Cody Stutz, and Brad Kellner. We have that on the site where Trotter talked about how Smith acknowledged, hey, with Derek Stingley, we can't just have a cornerback play press coverage all the time. Even they have to take a break. So we have to have them play some zone, and we like his versatility. It's why we took him. So, and then Miles Smith also talked about back on February the 22nd about how they deployed it at the University of Illinois, and he saw it kind of evolve over the five seasons that they were there in the Big Ten. And so at least there's an acknowledgement of that you just can't play the same old Tampa 2 from the glory days of Warren Sapp in today's pass-happy NFL. So at least there's an acknowledgement. We'll see if there's an execution therein.
That's something I love about Lovie, that he is really self-aware. He comes off this way in interviews. You can tell with the way players talk about him. He doesn't want to go down as a dinosaur head coach who took a third head coaching gig that he had no business taking. He seems very willing to adapt his game, and with the offenses look a lot different than when he was winning a Super Bowl in Chicago. And then he does not want this to end like it did in Tampa. I'm optimistic. He seems like a very good leader, and I like the pieces he's put around himself.
Yeah, and I think it also helps that he has a really committed, focused, and grounded and centered general manager in Nick Caserio, as opposed to what he had, you know, in Tampa Bay, where really they were trying to overcome seasons of just being in the muck. I mean, Houston's really only been in the muck two seasons, okay? Mm-hmm. For Tampa Bay, by the time Lovie Smith took over, let's see, 2014. So they hadn't had a winning season since 2010. They hadn't been to the playoffs since 2007. So it was just really down times for them. So for Smith, I think that he's got better backing than he did in Tampa Bay to do it his way.
Yes, absolutely. And they seem to be on the same page, which in a rebuild like this, I'm so glad they are. And I like the picks they made, too. We're going to learn a lot at rookie minicamp next week.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Because even though it's basketball on grass, even though it's basically a bunch of kittens playing with each other near the scratching post, it's still football at the end of the day. And you can see the mental aspect of if guys are getting it, if guys aren't getting it, if guys can hold up, if there's soft tissue injuries, you know, if there's the hamstring monster and the soft tissue injury gremlin and all of these elements. So what do you want to see out of rookie minicamp this weekend, John?
I'll go three headlines. Number one, I'm very curious to hear about where they're lining up Jalen Petrie. That's probably the biggest topic of conversation right now amongst the Texans fan bases. A really versatile player at Baylor whose size and athletic profile says strong safety, but his highlights and what he does best say linebacker, and in this defense in the Tampa 2, he looks like a nickel corner. Where are they going to put Petrie? How do you take advantage of a guy that you spent the 37th overall pick on? We know he's freakishly talented. We know he has a nose for the football, but how does Lovie Smith and his staff want to use Petrie? My next question is, I also, on that note, I'd like to know where they're lining up Deculus, the sixth-round pick from LSU, whether he's going to be a tackle or guard. But less important, my second big point, are guys injured? Is Stingley playing? I don't think Mechie's going to be ready for football, but is Mechie there? I would like to hear a healthy minicamp. And then finally, a little hype around Damian Pierce would be cool. I want the Texans to have a legitimate running back this year. So I would fall for some clickbait headlines about how good Damian Pierce looks.
Yeah. I mean, those are three good ones. And they've, you know, two out of three of them were ones that I was going to pick. But,
Sorry.
Well. No, no, it's good because I want to see what they're going to do with Christian Harris and how he at where he's at, because it kind of felt like Garrett Wallow, who just took a while to get going. So with someone coming from Alabama and being in a linebacker-friendly system, what's Christian Harris going to look like? Is he going to get it? And then, I want to know where John Metchie's at. I want to know where Derek Stingley's at. I think those are going to be some pretty big areas that are going to really, you know, that's where the fans are going to go. So for me, Tegan Quitoriano, what's he going to like? Because Galco said on this podcast that, yeah, people are perceiving him as a blocking tight end, but he saw at the Shrine Bowl how he had the tools to be a complete tight end and to add in some of those receiving elements. So is that going to show up in rookie minicamp? And then I don't really have a third one. So
I will say the point you made about Harris is a really good one and something that we can touch on, because I want to know they probably won't tell us unless reporters are able to see it, but what linebacker spot does he project to? Because
you won't be able to, no.
I'm just curious.
Won't get to tell you that.
I know, but because Christian Kirksey's obviously going to man the mic. He's going to play middle linebacker. And then last year, Kamu Grugier-Hill had his breakout season playing the weak side linebacker. And with Harris's size and athletic profile, that's kind of where he fits the best, playing one of those two. But the big open position is Garrett Wallow is probably slated to start over on the strong side. But Harris isn't big enough. So I'll be really curious to see, do they start prepping him for a role where they kind of do have a natural hold, the strong side linebacker, or is he going to play his natural position at the middle linebacker spot? And you're right, we won't know.
Yeah, so, and again, good health, and that no one, just good health.
Yes, prayers up.
I won't need to go through the scenarios, kind of like in McClintock, where they like, okay, we're going to have a fair fight. So no poking in the eyes and no kicking in the knees and no, and they like demonstrate it. So yeah, I'm looking forward to rookie minicamp because, and this is the thing, people act like, oh my gosh, it's 9 months from the Super Bowl. No, for me, this is exciting. This is my favorite spring sport, okay, is spring ball and off-season workouts. So I'm really looking forward to the news coming out of NRG Stadium this weekend.
Mark, you're not watching the Astros light it up?
No. I watch it on Twitter, on everybody's timeline, where people are like, you're done! Yeah, that's how I watch the
Jeremy
Astros.
Pena! Yeah, the Astros are a lot of fun right now. You're missing out, man. But I agree.
Well, it's okay. Game. Hey, at least they're making John McClain happy. That, you know, that was bad when we had him on at the beginning. I think it was their first series of the year. You know, and he ripped into the Astros.
Oh, when McClain's happy, Houston is happy. That's what I'm going to say.
You know, that might be the truth, to be honest with you.
But you're right. We're going to learn a lot from rookie minicamp, especially on a team like this. We're going to ask a ton from these guys.
Yes. Okay. All right. So let me ask you this. If rookie minicamp were an appetizer at a steak restaurant, you know, one of those Texas-themed cattleman type of steak restaurants, what type of appetizer would rookie minicamp be?
I feel like it would be like a spinach dip, if you're familiar with what I'm talking about. Kind of an acquired taste, and it might sound like it's not all that interesting, but once you bite into it, a lot of flavor there, good texture. What would you say rookie minicamp is?
Yeah, I would. It's either the spinach dip or it's the loaded cheese fries, although I think that's more like mandatory minicamp, which is next month.
Yeah, I feel like for it to be cheese fries, we're going to need to have Boy Wonder Davis Mills in the building working with the team, and he is not a rookie.
That's right. And when Pro Football Focus comes out with an off-season grade of what happened in 2021, that's like when you eat peanuts and you throw the shells on the floor.
That was not a comparison I was expecting. That's a good one, Mark. You and these food analogies. You're strong with these.
I'll tell you what, and then we'll get out of here. I just, if you give me a chance, I'll randomly start talking. And maybe we should get Sam Howell on, or I should just do a phone in with him on behalf of USA Today just for this. Is if you give me a chance, I will start steering the conversation into chicken, into talking about chicken.
Wait, Mark, before we go, if you learned that Davis Mills only ate chicken tenders, had never had a steak, had never had a fish, what would you think of him as our potential franchise quarterback? More or less likely to succeed?
I would think that, as John Harbaugh said, don't eat a chicken, it's a nervous bird. That's what I would think.
What?
So if he's only eating chicken, that means that he's pretty nervous back there in the pocket. But with the way that he commands a situation, I would have to say that he's not just eating chicken, that he's eating some sirloin, some grilled salmon, some pulled pork. I don't think he's just eating chicken.
Yeah, I agree. That's my quarterback.
There we go. Okay, all right. Where can they follow you on Twitter, John?
Then you guys can follow me at John H. Crumpler. I'll be riding Texans all offseason, and I'm going to be trying on some different caps. So stay tuned for some announcements from my page. Mark, where can they find all our content, and where can they follow you?
At the Texans Wire on Twitter, texanswire.usatoday.com, and follow me on Twitter at the real Mark Lane. And it's been a pleasure putting another one in the books with you, John.
As always, man. All right, fellas. Have a good morning, everyone.